ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the invitation to come back to Budapest to talk. This is also very welcome date in my diary to be in Budapest to learn about history. And I'm learning about the Hungarian Reformation this morning. Professor Monok has very kindly given me a booklet to develop my knowledge of the European Reformation. Since being British, we all have to learn how to be good Europeans. But no discussion about Brexit today, please, because I'm out of suggestions as to what might happen in the next few weeks. What I am going to talk about is open science and how you can lead a change to open science at university level. And this is what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the LERU plans for moving European research universities to open science. LERU is the League of European Research Universities, and I chair the info group, the community on open science and open access in that grouping of universities. And then I'm going to give some examples, mainly from my own institution, of what my university, UCL, University College London, has done to introduce open science practices at an operational level. So I'm going to talk about UCL Press, our new open access press, look at the launch of our new research data repository that we launched in June this year, and then look at the policy, the university policy for rewards and evaluation of academic researchers. How do you get academic buy-in to these really significant changes that you're trying to introduce at university level? And one answer is to reward them, to pay them more, and to acknowledge their contributions to open science in the promotion scheme that's run every year in UCL for promotion through the academic grades to full professor. And I'll say a little bit about our policy, which I helped to develop. Then I'm going to come back to LERU and look at what the LERU vice-chancellors tell me is their vision of open science, having described all the implementations that we've introduced into my university. And then end the presentation, which I hope will take about 25, certainly no more than 30 minutes, on how we, Tiberius and I, are working together to try and build an open science community, of which this chapter of the Focus on Open Science workshops is part. So the LERU roadmap, the League of European Research Universities' understanding of open science, is built on the eight pillars of open science as defined by the European Commission. So these are the eight pillars, the eight building blocks that the Commission has identified that it wants to address in championing, certainly under Commissioner Moides, and we hope under the new Commissioner who's been appointed from Bulgaria in the last few days. We hope that the Commission will continue to advocate this programme. These are the eight building blocks, and the ones in orange, the three in orange, are the ones I'm going to talk about today. I could talk about the others, but not in half an hour. It would just be too much of a race through all those building blocks. I am going to talk about the future of scholarly publishing. I am going to talk about research data and how a new research data repository that we've launched in UCL will contribute to a really important European development, the European Open Science Cloud. And then, as I say, look at the rewards piece. If these developments are the ones that you're introducing at an institutional level, how do you get academic buy-in? You do it through your rewards and promotions procedures. And I'll explain how we've done that in UCL. If you do want a general roadmap which explains how you make progress in all those eight areas of open science as defined by the Commission, you could do worse than look at the LERU roadmap for open science at this URL. And of course, all these slides will be available after the presentation as an open access slide deck. We make, I should be honest, I chaired the working group that developed the roadmap. And the roadmap was signed off by the rectors of the 23 Leru universities. So I had to present it to all 23 rectors in the rectors' assembly and get them to agree to change the way that their universities worked. Because open science represents a fundamental cultural change in how research is done, how it's evaluated, how it's stored, how it's shared, how it's rewarded, and the esteem that comes from that activity, because traditional measures and traditional ways of publishing and traditional ways of working don't always apply, in fact, often do not apply in an open science environment. And I'll try and explain how that works. And looking at the three examples I'm going to talk about in my talk, about the three innovations in open science that we have introduced in my university. But all the innovations I'm going to talk about are all based on the 41 recommendations we made in the roadmap. So the roadmap is our blueprint for how you deliver open science at a university level or at an institutional level where you work. So let's look at the first of these, which is the future of scholarly publishing. What does scholarly publishing look like in an open science environment? Well, there is one way of assessing what the future model looks like, and that is looking at Plan S, the plan for changing the publishing landscape in Europe, ideally the world, but taking effect mainly currently in Europe, being advocated by Science Europe and quietly being supported by the European Commission. And the implementation of Plan S would involve a very radical change in a very short space of time in how researchers can publish, where they can publish, and what the mechanisms are for making that dissemination effective. Since the vision for Plan S is to introduce transformative deals in your institution to deliver immediate 100% open access, so that hybrid publishing, the present model of hybrid publishing, where you pay APCs for open access for individual articles in a subscription journal, that model should no longer apply in an open science environment run by Plan S, because Plan S doesn't tolerate hybrid publishing and doesn't have as part of its vision the maintenance of subscription as a model. So when your consortia were meeting yesterday, I hope the most important thing on your agenda was how do you turn all your current subscription deals into transformative deals, because that is the vision behind Plan S. And the maintenance of subscriptions as a model for delivering European research is no longer going to be valid in a Plan S environment. If Plan S becomes the model by which Europe transforms the way that it delivers a research output. And the 23 rectors of the research-intensive universities in Leru have, of course, issued a statement giving their comments on Plan S, and I'll come back to that at the end of the session. So if you are going to transform, if you're going to use this model to transform the future of scholarly publishing, libraries who maintain and manage subscription income from the university, in the sense that this is the income in the university that's used to pay for subscriptions, need to know what to do in order to work in this transformative environment. So in our open access workshop, open science workshop in Geneva in June this year. This is a biannual three-day workshop that we hold in Geneva. We had one of our workshops on Plan S and what the implications of Plan S were for individual libraries. And you could do worse than look at the results of that half-day discussion in the workshop on how you implement Plan S in your institution by looking at this URL here. at the results that we have put on as an ODO from the discussion we had in that workshop. So Plan S is one way of changing the way that research activity is disseminated and shared in a global level. It isn't UCL's preferred model, it isn't my university's preferred model, and there is a great deal of concern amongst UCL academics and amongst academics in the other 22 research-intensive universities in Leru at the impact that Plan S will have on current publishing patterns. So another model, the model that we have chosen in UCL, is to look at creating an alternative publishing platform which is Plan S compliant, and that is UCL Press. And it's the first of these two actions that you are able to take if you want to be Plan S compliant, but use a different route other than the transformative subscription route to deliver Plan S compliant outputs. So we have established in 2015 UCL Press as the first fully open access university press in the UK. It is a department of the library, so I brought it into the library, and I'm the chief executive of the press, and the press staff, the 10 publishing staff who make up the contingent for the press report to me. They're all professional publishers. I didn't employ librarians to be publishers. Librarians have, I'm a librarian myself, we have fantastic skills, but we're not necessarily publishers. So I wanted to bring in professional publishers. So all my staff are professionally trained publishers. But the model that we work with is a fully open access model. So the publishing staff bring in the publishing expertise, and I, using the Leru roadmap, the blueprint for open science developments, have developed the open access publishing model that we work with to deliver fully open access Plan S compliant outputs. And the results speak for themselves. So we started with research monographs. That was the format that we decided we would start to work with in the press. And we published 110 books since we started. We publish about one book a week at the moment, and that is the target for each academic year, to publish 50 research to get into print and electronic format 50 peer-reviewed monographs a year. And these are the results. The main outputs are digital rather than paper. You can buy paper copy if you want to retain that rather old-fashioned way of reading material. You can buy a paper copy over the through the website. But most of the interactions are digital, with a fully open access version that's available actually in UCL Discovery, which is our open access repository. And there's also a copy on the JSTOR platform in the United States. So we've had just over 2 million downloads for those 110 titles in since we started publishing in 2015. And the heat map shows the intensity in terms of numbers of downloads in individual parts of the world, including 5,000 downloads from Hungary of those 110 titles, because we track where the downloads are coming from country by country each month to see where the impact of the press outputs is the greatest. These are the five most heavily downloaded books since we started publishing. And the most heavily downloaded book by a mile is this one on the left. It's by Professor Danny Miller, who is a professor of anthropology in my university in UCL, and is the result of an ERC, European Research Council, funded grant into the impact of social media on society. Now, this book has been downloaded 351,000 times all over the world since he published it. If you were selling research monographs over the bookshop counter in the conventional way, that's the conventional model, since research monographs by and large aren't available digitally in open access format or in a commercial digital format, a good sales figure for research monographs over the bookshop counter worldwide is something like 200. It's a tiny market for selling research monographs. Why? Because the costs are so high. And many of the research monographs are so specialised, they're appealing to a very discreet audience. So our argument in UCL is that open access publishing, through a fully open access publishing house, transforms the role of the monograph in the scholarly research process because it makes it more visible and more people will read the output as a result. And that will be good for the researcher who's written the book, and for the research community that's actually reading the book. So open access transforms the role of the research monograph, particularly in the arts, humanities, and social science areas where the monograph is the main unit of output. So the press works not just for UCL Press, for my university, but will also act as a white label publisher for other universities as well, behind the scenes, who want to buy our publishing services, but don't want to make the level of investment that we've made in UCL in terms of staffing and infrastructure. So we do offer a white label service where a university can buy our publishing services but still brand the outputs with their own university logo and with their own university name. And Dublin City University in the Republic of Ireland is the first university to buy this service from us. So they have become the first fully open access university press in Ireland, using UCL Press as the engine behind the scenes to drive their publishing activity. So all our outputs are branded as Dublin City University Press outputs. And to the rest of the world, it looks like they are Dublin City University Press products, but it's UCL Press behind the scenes who's doing all the technical work and producing the copy that Dublin takes and loads into its local repository as a Dublin City University output. And this is a service we offer to any academic or a research institution in Europe who's interested in buying our services. Let's look at the second area that we've worked on in UCL, and that's we're in research data. And of course, in an open science world, research data is the new currency as far as research outputs are concerned. So here's a typical flowchart of how the research process works. You have the researcher on the left-hand side, and you have the outputs from the research process in the middle. The outputs are on the right-hand side. And these, in an open science world, consist of both publications, so that's books, conference proceedings, and journal articles. And in the top two boxes, you see how you make those available as open access outputs, either as gold open access outputs or as green outputs in an institutional or subject-based repository. But in an open science world, you also have the outputs for research data, and you want to make those available as well. So those are the third and fourth boxes on the right-hand side, the dark green and the red boxes. And what we have done in UCL, over the last 12 months, we went live in June this year, is to launch the research data repository. So the UCL Research Data Repository is the data equivalent of the publications repository that we've been running for several years. The Research Data Repository is designed to enable researchers who are producing research data, which they want to make available as open data, and to share it with the academic community. The UCL Research Data Repository is the place where they are invited to store that data as part of their publications activity. So they'll make the publication available as an open access publication, but also share the data on which the publication is based through this new research data repository. And the research data repository will expose its contents to the world. It is an open repository, after all. And that's how we intend to interact with the EOSC, the European Open Science Cloud, once we've established with the EOSC board what the rules of engagement are for a university to disclose its data content and make that available through this European portal, the European Open Science Cloud. So the repository is designed to be the main way UCL interacts with the European Science Cloud once those rules of engagement have been made available. So let's look at the third line of activity that we've undertaken in UCL. I said if you want to get academics to change the way they publish and to change the world, to start thinking about sharing the data that they're producing on which those publications are based, you have to recognise their contribution through your rewards and evaluation processes, and that's what we've done in UCL. So this is Bernard Dumontier, who is Rector Emeritus of the University of Liège in Belgium. He has just published a report for the European Commission on rewards and career evaluation in an open science world. And this is Bernard speaking at that Geneva workshop, which I chaired in Geneva for 3 days in June. And Bernard is saying it's impossible to successfully introduce open science practice into your university unless you change your promotion and rewards procedure as well to deliver recognition for the really very significant changes that open science demands. And this is his matrix for how you change that promotion and reward process. So he's talking not about metrics, but about a matrix. So if you're not talking about metrics, it means that those of us who heard yesterday in the reception that the journal impact factor was still important as a way of assessing academic credibility, those ideas, you tear them up and you throw them away. Because in an open science environment, the journal impact factor tells you absolutely nothing about the academic quality of individual articles or of individual outputs. Because it was never meant to be used like that, and it's a lazy way of substituting for reading the article and making a judgment yourself. So journal impact factors are a no-no in an open science world. And using Bernard's matrix, where you introduce this matrix in your institution, you'd be using 23 criteria under six section headings in order to make that sort of assessment and to replace nasty metrics like the journal impact factor. And you'll see here under section one, under research outputs, there number three in the list is data sets. So in an open science world, you are able to use data sets as a criterion, or the quality of data sets, the number of data sets, the impact that that data set is having on the academic field in which it's being produced. You can, for the first time, officially use that data set as a criterion for appointment and promotion, because you're not just looking at publications and you're not just using journal impact factors. So don't use journal impact factors as a surrogate for quality. In my institution, we're just about to introduce a bibliometrics policy that we've taken 2 years to develop, which will enshrine these principles in the policy, which I'll ask our academic senate to approve. It's currently going out to consultation with every academic department in UCL. All 75 academic departments are being able to comment on it before we present it to the senate. They're broadly in agreement with this open science approach that we are taking, and we are looking at the San Francisco Declaration, which decries the use of journal impact factors as a surrogate for quality, and based our principles for reward and evaluation on the Leiden Manifesto for research metrics. So we have been able to start changing our policies. I talked about the bibliometrics policy we're about to introduce. We did last year introduce a new promotions policy in UCL, and I wrote the criteria for using open science as the criteria for rewarding open science activity, and from grade 7 to 10 in the research piece. So right up to the grade 10, which is the academic grade for professorships in UCL, you should be using, and you're invited to use, your open science activity as reasons for promotion, to be promoted through their grades to full professorship. And we are one of the first universities anywhere in Europe to change the promotions criteria to actively acknowledge open science as a reason for delivering a promotion in your career. I said I'd conclude by coming back to the Leru leadership statement. I asked the rectors, the 23 research-intensive universities, what they thought of open science and what the most significant challenge was to delivering open science. And they all agree to the principles of open science, but don't like Plan S as a way of delivering it, because they fear that their costs will increase, because being research-intensive universities and producing most of the research, they think they're going to be asked to pay a lot more for publishing it, because the authors are living in their universities and they're not prepared to do that. So without a successful conclusion to that debate, the transition to full open science using Plan S as a mechanism is going to be a little bit fraught. Let me finally conclude by saying that this chapter, once again, is part of the building an open science community that we're trying to encourage in Europe. I've talked about the OAI meetings in Geneva that happen every 2 years. We have 10 or 11 chapters of this focus on open science workshop in Europe every year, and we're very keen to come back year on year to look at current developments, that a best practice that's being introduced across Europe, and to hear your reactions to the work that you're doing to introduce open science here in Hungary, to change the way that academic activity is undertaken and promoted. So finally, let me say, I think open science, despite all the challenges, is good for the researcher. It does present some challenges, but it's an opportunity and not a threat. That's how my university sees it. It's an opportunity to do new things. But as I say, the Leru rectors are very doubtful that whether Plan S in its present form can deliver that change that it intends to deliver. Well, that's still an issue for debate. And if you've got comments or questions, put them on Slido, because it will be interesting to have that conversation later today. And if you have been, thank you very much for listening.